to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The 2006 Emerald Awards have finally been announced, and among this year's recipients for environmental excellence is a hog producer who found a better way to quench the thirst of his little piggies while conserving water at the same time. And Alberta will be hitting center stage at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival this summer. Among the people heading south to show the Americans a slice of Alberta culture and innovation is robot scientist Dan Lizotte. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Once again, the Alberta Emerald Foundation for Environmental Excellence has recognized the tremendous efforts of Alberta companies, organizations, and individuals who are going to extra lengths to improve or conserve our environment. The Emerald Award in the category of Innovation and Research went to hog producer Dennis McCarricker. He and his wife Maggie run a growth Finnish hog operation southwest of High River.
What we've done at home is water is an issue. It is something that we take for granted sometimes. I call water the forgotten nutrient. So we were looking at ways of monitoring our water use at home and then looking at there's use versus consumption. So we ran a project using different types of drinkers for our grower pigs and seeing if what the difference between, say, use and consumption would be without affecting performance.
What did you find out?
We found that we ran the trial or pilot for a year. We wanted to limit as many variables as we could. And we found that with a very simple change of nipple drinkers, going from a standard bite nipple drinker to a ball-type bite drinker, I would say it's conservative to say you can reduce water use as opposed to consumption by 35% over a period of 12 months.
Now, did you do this all on your own, or did you have some sort of research organization behind you?
I think my wife is my research organization. I'll have to give her a doctorate in this. Climate Change Central, as well as the Canadian Pork Council Greenhouse Gas Mitigation Program, sponsored this. I've been interested in water for some time, and it was too many years ago, I won't tell you how many, that at the Banff Pork Seminar one year, there was a fellow from the UK over talking about water as the forgotten nutrient and how we have to take a little bit more time and effort and look at water management.
Now, how large is your operation?
It's a family farm. We produce 3,000 market hogs a year. So what we did is our grower barn is really suited to do a trial in. And we converted the barn, looked at weather effects, et cetera, and we made some changes in the barn. So half of the males and half of the females were the control group, and the other half were on the trial, the ball-type nipple drinker. And we weighed the pigs going in. We monitored performance and recorded the water consumption on a daily basis, 365 days a year.
What saving is this then for the environment?
Well, you know, livestock producers do not take water out of the water cycle. However, you know, groundwater is a different matter. Groundwater is an issue, and I don't think it's in anybody's interest not to use water to its full capability. Reducing water wastage, shall we call it, reduces the amount of manure that is in your barn, so that reduces the amount of spreading costs, hence energy, to do that. A 35% reduction on water is a 35% reduction on your electrical bill to run the pump to pump the water in the barn. So there's many advantages of doing this from an energy-saving point of view, which goes a lot to help the environment. Also, there was a side benefit to this project that really surprised my wife and I both, and that was it changed the way we manage our barn. Water tells you a story, and it tells you a story before you can see it in the doing your husbandry work with your pigs. If, say, the feed changed a bit or the density of the feed changed a bit, before I would ever notice it, just by writing down the water consumption daily, it triggered us to take a look. Something's different here.
Have others adopted this now?
With the help of Alberta Pork and Climate Change Central, we've been trying to transfer this bit of information to as many producers as we can. I have spoken at the Red Deer Swine Symposium. I've spoken at the Saskatchewan Swine Symposium. And I know have some producers that are contemplating it. I know some producers that have changed part of their barns over to this nipple drinker technology, and we're going to keep working on that. And I believe there will be, you know, I can't quantify it to you right now, but I believe producers will change over. Quite frankly, it's a no-brainer. If you guys want to save some money, do this.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you.
That was Dennis McCarricker, a hog producer from High River. He received the 2006 Emerald Award for Innovation and Research. One finalist in that same category was Agrium Incorporated. Agrium is producing what it calls environmentally smart nitrogen, and that's at its fertilizer plant near Calgary. Just before the awards ceremony began, I had a chance to speak with Agrium managers Dave Easton and Murray Hasanoff. Murray describes the product.
The product we've taken is ordinary agricultural urea. And we put a polymer coating on it, and the polymer coating controls the release rate and tries to match the release rate of nitrogen in the soil, in the soil solutions, to match the nitrogen demand of a plant such as corn, which has a varying demand for nitrogen as it goes through its various growth stages.
What would be the environmental benefit of this?
Well, if we can release the nitrogen as the plant requires, it has less chance to get in the environment either through the water mechanism or through gaseous loss mechanisms.
And how long has this product been on the market?
We first took our ESN product to the ag markets in the spring of 2002, just in a very limited test trial. We expanded our plant in 2003. This was just a small demonstration plant. And just this past January, February, we commissioned a commercial-scale plant in our Carsland facility just outside of Calgary.
So is this something that you expect to go worldwide?
We expect it has tremendous potential to grow in the world. Growers all over the world recognize that a percentage of the nitrogen they put on their crops doesn't get into their crops, and they're aware of that, and they really haven't had a lot of alternatives other than split applications or multiple applications of fertilizer. This provides them an alternative to that, which can reduce the loss of nitrogen.
Dave, you were involved in the development of this product. What went into it?
Well, this is a second generation, actually. We've had previous generations that we've been working on for the better part of 15 years now, so it's been some changes in the technology to the polymer. The main focus has been trying to get the cost down to the point where it can be used in all crops, not just in the specialties.
What difficulties did you face trying to develop it?
Well, the coating that we're putting on is about half the thickness of a hair, so it's an extremely thin coating. We're trying to coat many, many tons an hour, and the coating has to be perfect. If there's a single pinhole in it, then you don't have controlled release product. All the water will go in through the pinhole, the fertilizer will come out without control. So there's quite a technical challenge as to how do you apply a very thin coating perfectly at high rates.
Murray, being a finalist, what does that mean for your company?
Well, it recognizes the efforts that lots and lots of people put into over the last 10, 15 years. To be recognized by someone like the Emerald Foundation is pretty significant for us.
Thank you very much, Murray.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
That was Murray Hasanoff, the Director of Diversified Products at Agrium Incorporated. I also spoke with Dave Easton, a Senior Specialist in Diversified Products Engineering. Agrium was a finalist in the Innovation and Research category at the 2006 Emerald Awards. The Emerald Awards recognize environmental stewardship in a number of areas. A finalist in the category which recognizes not-for-profit associations was a joint effort by Enervision, Built Green, and SATE. These groups are addressing the needs of the construction industry to start building environmentally sustainable homes. Kevin Gunn is the coordinator of applied research in construction at SAIT and is also the executive director of Enervision.
Enervision is a not-for-profit corporation solely owned by the Alberta Home Builders Association and provides our tagline, best describes it, greener home solutions to the home building industry. We provide technical support, research, and deliver some training programs in conjunction with SAIT to train and educate and support builders in how do they build a more environmentally friendly home at the lowest cost possible.
What success have you had so far?
Over the last several years since industry first came to SAIT with the idea for this program and the development evolved, we've had many successes. I guess the biggest one statistically would be the 2,400 homes that are registered in the Build Green program. That's our flagship program. We've been successful in amalgamating the best of everything that's out there into one name, Build Green. That reduces confusion for the home builder and the consumer as they go forward with that purchase. We've expanded the program into multi-unit buildings, single-family homes. Now we're going into renovations and communities. So really, Built Green as a name with the partnerships, a big part of that success, SAIT and the Built Green Society of Canada and Enervision. We've been able to create a suite of programs that's voluntary, industry-driven, and fills a need, and ultimately creates a win-win where industry does it, believes in it both from an environmental aspect and a business model, and the consumers and the environment win at the same time.
With this building boom that's on in Alberta, are you finding that people are more receptive to these sorts of environmentally friendly ideas in construction?
Well, consumers are, definitely. And that's one thing that Built Green, the Built Green program, Enervision SAIT and the Society are working hard to do is work with industry so that industry can provide that product to the consumer who wants it. Probably the biggest challenge in this market is that builders can sell homes. They don't need it to be green to sell it right now. It's a very hot market. So that, I think, says a lot about our success, that we've been able to have success in this type of market. And as things level off and become more normalized, it will mean just exponential growth in the Built Green program because builders will have time to take the training, do the work with Enervisions and SAIT to go through the process to provide that product to the consumer who does want it at the end of the day.
My name is Larry Rosia and I'm Dean of the Construction Department at SAIT Polytech.
Now, Larry, SAIT is responsible for training the new people that are going into the construction industry. What have you had to do in order to integrate these Built Green ideas into the training program?
Well, that's the real value that we see in being partners with business and industry. It keeps us on the leading edge as well. And we sort of have a real niche here where we do have the skills as well as some of our professors and the facilities to do some of this these innovation projects and applied research projects with industry. We're finding that we're being asked by our students about the new technologies, and by being this closely involved with industry, we're able to provide them with some real hands-on experience in innovation in the home building industry. We've kind of already worked some of what we've developed and sort of innovated with Kevin's area into our apprenticeship programs because a lot of our apprentices are exposed to this new technology. And we also have exposed it to our architectural technologies in our architectural engineering technology program at SAIT.
Now I see we're joined right now by another member of the team, the Built Green Society of Canada, Dave Bengert. Now, David, what does it mean for your group, Built Green, to be part of this Emerald Award nomination?
I guess for us what it means is that we're getting some recognition from the environmental community for an initiative that's a combination of both private industry and public education. something that we have done without being encouraged by any environmental group, but as a group, we felt it was the right thing to be doing. It's nice to see the more environmentally focused groups giving some recognition to us.
So, Kevin, what has it meant to being chosen as a finalist in the Emerald Awards?
Oh, it's a great honor. It personally, it validates for me that we're on the right path. Partnerships, win-win-win partnerships that benefit the consumer, society, industry, and ultimately the environment as well is always what we've tried to do. At the same time, make it sustainable, and it's just great recognition that someone else thinks we're doing something of value as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Kevin Gunn, Executive Director of Enervision and also the Coordinator of Applied Research and Construction at SAIT. I also spoke with Dr. Larry Arosia, Dean of Construction at SAIT, and David Bengert, President of the Built Green Society of Canada and the Director of Purchasing for Jamin Masterbuilt Homes. Also making a great showing at the 2006 Emerald Awards was the Science Alberta Foundation. The group's Science in a Crate program was one of three finalists in the education category. Dr. Arlene Ponting is Science Alberta Foundation's CEO.
We've got several crates in our program on the environment where students pursue various aspects of environmental science. And what our crate program is, there are trunk-sized boxes that go into classrooms around the province. And we certainly know that the environment is a very, very important area for students to learn about science and technology. We know that if we're going to solve many of the environment problems, it's going to be through science and technology. And we want youth to understand that if we think about these issues in a creative way, that we can solve them in making a better society and a prosperous society, but a society that's got clean air and water.
Can you give me an example of one of the crates, how it operates, what's in it?
We can. We have one particular crate that's called Envirofiles. Envirofiles is sort of a mystery crate where they need to solve various mysteries that have happened in the environment. We like to use mysteries when we're teaching and helping students learn about science because the way they solve a mystery is exactly the way they'd solve a science problem. Sort of, what's the problem or who did it? What's my hypothesis and what's my evidence? So in this particular crate, they've got seven different challenges that they need to solve in order to come to a conclusion of what's happened in the environment that caused that particular problem.
How much use do these crates get? How many children do you think have actually experienced them?
Well, our entire crate program last year reached 85,000 students. So we were in about 117 communities and approximately 3,000 classrooms. So it's very, very good in terms of uptake in the classroom. Very good penetration. We're 1 in 8 classrooms with the entire crate program and really making a difference because of that diffusion that we have across the province.
What does it mean to you in the organization being chosen as a finalist in the Emerald Awards?
It's very, very meaningful. We're an incredibly busy office. We have a very committed board. We have very loyal sponsors. But it's also very credentialing to have an external body like the Alberta Emerald Award Foundation to select us as one of the finalists. It gives us the energy to go on.
Well, thank you and congratulations, Arlene.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's always a pleasure.
That was Dr. Arlene Ponting, CEO of Science Alberta Foundation. You'll find a complete listing of all the recipients of the 2006 Emerald Awards on the Foundation's website at emeraldawards.com. The hot ticket in Washington, D.C. this summer is the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. And front and center is the province of Alberta. This marks the first time in its 40-year history that the Folklife Festival has highlighted some place in Canada. And among the 150 people who will show Americans just what this province is all about is Dan Lazat, a PhD candidate in computing sciences at the University of Alberta. Dan is taking a few companions with him. These happen to be robot dogs that are the focus of his research, which is funded in part by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence.
Well, what we're going to do is bring down some of our robots and try to give people a hands-on idea of the kind of research that we're doing in the department with them.
What do you use these robots for?
Currently, we're using them to test a method of improving how fast robots can walk. And so we've got some robot dogs made by Sony, and we're bringing them down, and we're going to let people try, people who are visiting, try to get the dogs to walk faster on their own and show them how we're learning to do it automatically.
Now, you've got one of these dogs set up in a display here. It actually looks like something I gave my kids, one of those battery-operated dogs that walks across the living room floor and then barks. Does this one bark?
He can certainly bark. He's got a speaker and he can play any number of sounds that are currently he has in his memory. And these robots were produced by Sony originally as toys. You know, that is their purpose. They're expensive toys, but that was what they had in mind. So that's why they look sort of friendly. And yeah.
Now you've got this demonstration set up. Show me what you're going to do.
Okay, so you see here that I've got my laptop set up and it's running this simple program that is connected to the dog over wireless, and there are 15 different sliders here that control different aspects of how the dog walks. And so I'll show you the second slider here, which is it's called the period of the walk, which basically tells the dog how long it should take to go through an entire walk cycle. So if I get him to run now at a low period,
now, he seems to be heading towards this yellow bottle.
Yes, he's programmed for yellow right now, really enjoys yellow. And what he does is once I've clicked this button here, he goes for a little walk according to the parameters that I've got set. And he estimates how fast he's been walking by basically by how quickly the yellow marker is getting bigger in his field of view.
So he's going to pick out yellow as opposed to the red and the pink and blue that you have set up here?
Yes. Once we get to the Smithsonian, we'll have some yellow ones and some red ones, and the dogs will be programmed separately so they don't smash into each other, things like that.
Now, you told me he barked, but I heard a meow.
Well, so I, you know, that was sort of an arbitrary choice. Yeah, it's convenient when you're programming the dogs to get them to make little noises when they do various things, and I just sort of arbitrarily chose to get him to meow whenever he received a new command to walk, just so that I, you know, had little feedback, knew that he had heard me kind of thing. Why not bark? I don't know. That just seems so conventional.
Well, he has a little button on his tail. Does it wag?
His tail can wag, yes. And his ears can flap as well, and we'll have... He's currently has his tail docked right now because it's safer in the lab if it's not sort of flopping around. But when we get to the Smithsonian, we'll reattach the ears and the tail for maximum cuteness.
Now, I know that there's a higher scientific purpose to this other than just walking the dog. What is it? What are you actually researching? What are you trying to get out of this?
So walking speed is an improving walking speed is sort of an interesting problem. There are 15 numbers that you have to set for the dog, and it's not immediately clear how you should set them in order to get the dog to perform well, i.e. run fast. And the people have tried various things, but we're looking at a method that can be used both for this improving the speed of walking dogs, and also I'm working with a colleague of mine, Daniel Nielsen, who is also in this department, and he's a vision guy, and he does stereo matching, where you have two images that are taken slightly apart, and you want to recover how far away the various objects in the image are. This problem also has about 5 or 6 parameters that you have to set, and it's not exactly clear how you're supposed to do that, and so the same method of improving the walk speed of the dog can be applied to improving the accuracy of this stereo vision program. Even though they seem completely unrelated, and they are, the method that we're researching is flexible enough that, you know, you can use it for either application. And we've got some preliminary results with this stereo vision thing, and it looks promising, so we're pretty excited.
Down the road, though, what would be the ultimate applications of this in order to help humankind?
Well, baby steps. But in all seriousness, The idea of learning from experience is really sort of the underlying, you know, the underlying thing that we're exploring here. And we're exploring one particular method of learning from experience, as in I took a walk and it was not very good, and so I will learn not to do that again in some sort of principled way. And so I'm hoping that this is something that will allow better decision-making in robots. It could also allow better decision-making in humans, because this kind of software can be, you know, you can take the robot out of the loop and you can have people feeding in data into the same sort of program and having the program help them by telling them, you know, this might be a good thing to try next, this might not be a good thing to try next. You know, what this is a different take on what's traditionally been done in statistics with experimental design and other things that it's been used in clinical trials in the past. This isn't directly applicable to that kind of thing immediately, but it is in the same sort of family of problems. So
your particular area of research then, what kind of problems are you dealing with right now? Like, does this dog give you a hard time?
Oh, does he ever. Anybody out there who's concerned that robots are going to take over the world should come down to my lab and I'll show them that no, that's not going to happen. And a lot of times robots don't actually work.
What progress are you making then?
Well, we're sort of constantly improving the system that we've got here. I just got back from a workshop in England that gave me some great ideas of how we can hopefully enable the dog to learn faster what a good walk is, and you know, and equally with the stereo vision should be helpful in that area too. So we're kind of working on getting as good as possible as quickly as possible.
How long are you going to be down at the Smithsonian?
I'll be down there for 2 weeks. And I'm really looking forward to it. There's going to be a great variety of things going on the National Mall and around town. We're going to have pancake breakfast at the Canadian Embassy, which I'm very excited about. And it's going to be really good. And some of my colleagues are going to come down for little bits, so I'll get to hang out with them, and they'll be able to help me out, which is nice too.
How many dogs do you have to take with you?
I've already got 4 on a big truck on the way down there. In fact, I think they're clearing customs right now as we speak. So hopefully they'll be all set up when I get there.
Well, you just have a really good time. Thank you very much, Dan.
Thank you.
That was Dan Lizotte, a PhD candidate in computing sciences at the University of Alberta. His research is funded in part by ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence. Dan and his team of robot dogs are among the group of 150 people showcasing Alberta life and culture at the Smithsonian Folklife Festival in Washington, D.C. The festivities start the week of June 26th and carry on till July 11th. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by Science Alberta Foundation, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Innovation and Science, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Alberta Conservation Association, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Research Council, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.